Hank's the family fixer, always with his tool belt. But living with prostate cancer, he needed help. He asked his doctor about Xtandi enzalutamide. Xtandi 40 milligram tablets treats men with prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and responds to a medical or surgical treatment to lower testosterone. Xtandi may cause serious side effects, seizure, a brain condition called PRESS, allergic reactions, heart disease that can lead to death, falls and bone fractures, swallowing problems or choking that can lead to death. Stop Xtandi and get medical help at once if your face, tongue, lip or throat start swelling. Tell your doctor at once if you faint, have a seizure, quickly worsening headache, decreased alertness, confusion, vision problems, chest pain or discomfort, or shortness of breath. Xtandi can cause harm to an unborn baby or miscarriage. Use birth control during and 3 months after Xtandi. Common side effects include muscle and joint pain, feeling unusually tired, hot flashes, constipation, less appetite, diarrhea, high blood pressure, bleeding, falls, fractures, and headache. Talk to your doctor and visit Xtandi.com.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
All right. Hi, everybody. What a trip the president's having. It's really made put the news on hyperspeed. Plus, we have court cases happening. The Supreme Court's going to look at birthright citizenship. That's what Trump put on as a put out there as a executive order. It put the executive order challenged, of course. It goes right up the courts to see if they can find, in fact, if it is constitutional or not. That is less political, more constitutional, a high-ranking argument, and we'll go over that, and especially if we see these arguments as they come out. Mike Brown's going to be with us, winner of the Great Gutfeld. What Did I Miss is going to be fun, but we also know the president has landed in the United Arab Emirates, the last leg of his journey, and there'll be breaking news there. Standing by, Senator Pete Ricketts. He is all over the Iranian deal, signing on with 40 other senators to support Trump's push to totally dismantle the Iranian nuclear apparatus. And there's all these hidden sites as well that's been exposed. The last one 2 weeks ago. Big three.
Number three.
I know many Iranians living in New York and Washington, D.C., and they're great people. And we want to have this end peacefully, not horribly. They have to move quickly.
But we have a military option on the brink. Iran indicates movement on the nuke program. But are they just stringing us along to break out on their own? Before it's too late, direct talks, I hope, take place. Meanwhile, Russia and Ukraine are in Turkey, but it looks like Vladimir Putin is a no-show. Zelensky is there. We'll talk about it.
Number two.
But at other times, it seemed the inner circle was doing everything they could to hide the extent to which Biden was diminished. The third cabinet secretary told me they were shocked by how the president was acting. He seemed, quote, disoriented and, quote, out of it.
Yeah, can you imagine that? Out of it? Like we've been talking about looking out of it for 4 years. Suddenly Jake Tapper notices in writing a book that Joe Biden was out of it. Yes, I know President Biden was not running the country. Now we know Dems knew he wasn't and couldn't run the country. And they looked the other way. That is unpatriotic. That is just some of the discovery of which and the magnitude of this is even beyond what I thought.
Number one.
There's this piece written this morning about all of these Biden administration officials that are watching this with shock and awe. And they said, here's one quote. When his personal instincts, Trump's, coincide with national interests, it's pretty remarkable how quickly he can move. That is a Biden official watching this in awe.
That is Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany, now a Fox News anchor, talking about what we're seeing with the president's journey. It's his final stop, first overseas trip, major impact, scripted and unscripted sessions. And we see the subplot is Syria getting their sanctions relieved, even though their government is sketchy at best. And at the same time, direct talks with Ukraine and Russia. Ukraine sends their president. Russia sends a medium range official. Let's bring in Senator Pete Ricketts. Senator, you got to be disappointed that Putin didn't show to a meeting he called.
Yeah, this is just further proof that Putin is not serious about peace. This is, you know, I think the president did the right thing to try and bring the two sides together. If there's anybody who can get Putin and Zelensky together, it's President Trump. But what we're seeing here is that Putin is acting like a dictator that he is. And while we want to make sure we do everything we can to try and bring peace here, if he's not willing to come to the table, then the alternative is just going back to giving Zelensky as much weapons as we can and making it clear to Putin he's not going to be successful here until he decides he is going to come back to the table.
But what about more sanctions? What about secondary sanctions? What about sanctioning the central bank?
Absolutely. We need to continue to ramp up the pressure on Putin. And, you know, frankly, one of the things that the president's not getting credit for, but when he talks about bringing oil prices down, not only does that benefit Americans, it harms Putin, right? This is what's feeding the Russian war machine is oil prices. And so when the president really focuses on bringing those energy prices down, that hurts them too. So, yes, we need to go back to sanctions. But frankly, let's bring oil prices down. That's really what's going to cut off his money to be able to run this war.
President probably would have jetted over there if he thought Putin was there. I got to give Zelensky credit. He did show up. And, you know, he did have friction with the president. We all saw the Oval Office. But since that time, both guys have really amended their ways. Communication's been pretty consistent since that meeting at St. Peter's. Here's the president, cut 32.
Nothing's going to happen until Putin and I get together, okay? And obviously he wasn't going to go. He was going to go, but he thought I was going to go. He wasn't going if I wasn't there. And I don't believe anything's going to happen, whether you like it or not, until he and I get together. But we're going to have to get it solved because too many people are dying.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. I just know it's going to be hard when you agree to get more weapons allocated to Ukraine.
Yeah, but we got to make sure that we're doing everything we can so that Putin comes to understand that he doesn't have a choice other than sitting down and bringing this war to an end.
So there was a report in NBC the White House has pushed back on that we gave the Iranians an offer, and we said, basically, this is what you'll need to do in order to avoid war, and that is dismantle your nuclear program, but keep enrichment low, and that means enrichment would take place. They push back on this, but you agree that they cannot enrich, and they can't have centrifuges. If they're going to have a nuclear program, and I doubt they even want one outside a weapons program, they got to do what UAE does, enrich outside the country.
Absolutely. There's 23 countries who have commercial civilian programs, nuclear programs, and they do what Canada and all these other nations do, which is they import, you know, the low-grade uranium so that they can run their nuclear reactors, but it's not weapons grade. We cannot allow Iran to have an enrichment program. The only way you will be able to absolutely confirm that they are not building nuclear weapons is disarmament. They cannot have centrifuges. They cannot be enriching. That's the only way we will ever really know that they don't have a nuclear bomb program. So this is one of the reasons why I put together this letter. Actually, 52 out of 53 Republican senators signed on to the letter to send to the president to strengthen his hand in his negotiations with Iran to say, look, you've got to disarm. You can't have nuclear weapons and you can't have an enrichment program. And, you know, frankly, they're sitting on a bunch of oil and gas. Why do they even need a nuclear program?
Yeah, they're worried about the environment. You know that. They're so worried about the environment.
That's exactly what I hear out of the Ayatollahs. They're all worried about greenhouse gases and global warming and stuff. Give me a break.
So on NBC, Richard Engel does a great job out in the field. He interviewed an advisor to the Grand Ayatollah. Here's what he said, cut 20.
Today, we sat down with Ali Shamkhani, the military, political, and nuclear advisor to Iran's supreme leader. He said Iran also wants a deal.
Yes, we are ready.
Shamkhani is one of the few people in Iran authorized to speak about the sensitive negotiations.
We can definitely have better relations with the U.S.
They never would have said that. They didn't say that at all during the Biden administration. And all Biden tried to do was kiss up to him for 4 years. Why do you think they at least are saying the right thing?
Because they know that President Trump actually will play hardball with them. I mean, the problem we had with Obama and then with Biden is they tried to buy off the Iranians. They said, well, if we just give enough money, they'll be nice to us. They'll be our friends. This is a theocracy, and this is a dictatorship. The only thing they understand is force. Under the first Trump administration, Trump put maximum pressure on, and the sanctions brought Iran's foreign reserves down from $122.5 billion to under $14 billion. And then Iran couldn't fund Hezbollah or Hamas or the Houthis. And they know they're facing the exact same thing again because Trump has already promised to put maximum pressure on. So they know they're facing going broke if they don't come to some sort of deal with the Trump administration. And they know Trump's serious and that we're going to do it. So that's the only reason they're at the table, is because Trump shows that he is strong.
So, Senator, at this point, they've never been more vulnerable. They lost their key ally in Syria. They've lost Hamas and Hezbollah, are greatly diminished, if not destroyed. Houthi rebels seem to be their one surrogate that seems to be still standing strong, even though we bombed them for 800 separate bombing missions. And they promised not to bomb us, but they're still sending rockets over to Israel. And now we see that their missile defense virtually destroyed because of two Israeli attacks. Don't you believe not only do they have to commit to dismantling, they also have to commit to no longer funding proxy terror groups throughout the region and no ballistic missiles?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things that the Trump administration has been clear when they've been talking about it as well. I think President Trump just said that a day or two ago, that part of this deal has got to be that they cannot be funding the Houthis and other proxy groups out there. This is, again, Iran is the largest state sponsor of terrorism. And we need, look, if we're going to have stability and peace in the Middle East, this has got to end. Iran can't be allowed to continue to fund these terrorist wars. And that's got to be part of the deal. Again, if Iran wants to have peace here, they've got to be able to be a peaceful nation, which means they can't create trouble. And again, we got to dismantle their nuclear program, and you'd mentioned the missiles as well. We cannot give them the ability to be able to strike out and attack our allies like Israel, because that means that we'll just continue to have this problem going forward.
You're on the Foreign Relations Committee and the Budget Committee, but I just want to get your thoughts about the president's message. Essentially, we're not going to tell you how to run your country, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Qatar. You do that yourself. These are our business deals. We want to do business with you. We're not talking about human rights. We're not talking about democracy. I don't have a problem with it. I know some people are saying that there's a huge problem with it, where democracy, we're for values and ethics. I think we are, but I just don't see that those demands resonating with people that we want to keep away from China and Russia.
Brian, we certainly always want to promote our values. We always want to talk about human rights and making sure that people understand that we want to promote democratic values. But we can't make that the only reason that we deal with somebody. We got to live in the real world, and there's a lot of other nations that have other values and have other ways of running things. And that doesn't mean that they can't be our friends. We got to work with them. And, you know, getting back to, let's take it the extreme, what we saw with the Biden administration, right? What the Biden administration started doing is like saying, oh, well, we're going to push our values on these countries, and we're going to start pushing things like LGBT, and we're going to start pushing like you got to have boys play girls sports or things like that. And those are not the values that all Americans share, frankly, and it's certainly not the values that in some of these countries. And so we were actually pushing countries away from us by trying to jam some of this stuff down on them. So I think that we've got to live in the real world. We've got to be pragmatic. We certainly always want to stand up for our values. But at the end of the day, you know, we want to have good relationships with countries like Saudi Arabia. We want to have good relationships with Qatar and the UAE. You know, these are important nations in the Middle East. So, you know, we can't make it that, oh, well, either you got to be look exactly like us or you can't be our friends. I mean, even Ronald Reagan said, if you're with me 80% of the time, you're my friend, not my enemy.
So this guy, Moaz Mustafa, joined us. He's from the Syrian Emergency Task Force, born in Syria, lived in America. Went back to Syria trying to be an emissary through post-Assad. And here's what he said about the significance of the president's decision to lift sanctions and meet with the interim president of Syria, who was, the majority of his adult life, a terrorist. Cut 14.
Today, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, all these different countries around the region have good relationship with the new Syrian government and are very, very pleased by President Trump now opening the door for Syria to go towards becoming a free, democratic country that's protects all of its people. And by his decision, it's the only thing that, by the way, kept China, Iran, and even Russia out of Syria. I mean, the future of Syria was going to be perhaps turmoil and war perpetually, especially with the sanctions that were placed. Today, President Trump stopped Syria from becoming a failed state.
And he gave a series of demands. And one is get Russia out. Number two is keep the ISIS terrorists locked up in prison and secure. And also work towards accepting the Abraham Accords, which means Israel has a right to exist, and set up trade relations. Your thoughts?
It is absolutely in our interest to have Syria be a peaceful nation where it does not have a Russian naval base. This is one of the ways the Russians were using to project their power into the Mediterranean. We don't want Syria hosting terrorists like Hezbollah who attack our allies like Israel. And we don't want the Chinese to have any more inroads into the Middle East either. So it is absolutely in our interest to try and develop a working relationship with Syria. We need to trust but verify here. I think that the president is reaching out his hand to see if we can develop this relationship. I think it's heading the right direction. But again, we got to trust but verify here. You know, this is a country that has been war-torn for a long time. We want to get it back on the right track. We want to keep all these bad actors out of the Middle East. And ultimately, we do want Syria to be able to recognize Israel if we're going to look at having a longer-term Middle East peace. So I think that's the right steps. We just got to be, you know, cautious and remember who we're dealing with and remember the region we're dealing with is, you know, this is heading the right direction, but there's a long road ahead of us to be able to declare victory on this one.
Right. I just love the fact that Iran no longer is welcome there. That helps us. And if we can keep Russia out of there, they're virtually out of the Middle East. And that works to our advantage. Senator Pete Ricketts, thanks so much.
Great. Hey, thanks a lot, Brian.
All right.
Thanks for having me on.
I love what you're doing, too. He's signing a leading the charge. 40-plus senators signing a letter in support of Trump's push to dismantle Iran's nuclear facilities. You listen to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
This episode is brought to you by SelectQuote. Life insurance can have a huge impact on our family's future. With SelectQuote, getting covered with the right policy for you is simple and affordable. SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents will tailor your experience to find a life insurance policy for your needs in as little as 15 minutes. And SelectQuote partners with carriers that provide policies for many conditions. SelectQuote. They shop, you save. Go to selectquote.com/SpotifyPod today to get started.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I think some of the criticism is fair, to be honest, of me. Certainly I'm not going to speak for anybody else. But knowing then what I know now, I look back at my coverage during the Biden years, and I did cover some of these issues, but not enough. I look back on it with humility.
Jake Tapper co-wrote a book with Alex Thompson of Axios, now talking about using unnamed sources, cabinet members, high-ranking officials, how out of it Joe Biden was, how little decisions he made, a few decisions he made, how little he actually worked. Some of the comments in his book, and I don't want to sell books, but it does worry me that people are getting away and making money off something that we've been saying that we were seeing for 4 years. This guy couldn't possibly be running the country. Now we know it for sure. One cabinet member worried, looking at the president, that he says that the staff was protecting the president from his own cabinet. Another one said the president was shielded in every meeting. They just wanted to keep him happy and make sure he didn't lose his temper. Another cabinet member says he walked in, his jaw was open, mouth agape. He seemed totally out of it. He would only be able to work 4 to 6 hours on a good day. Can you imagine the bad day? If this isn't a 25th Amendment for any patriotic person, I don't know what is. And I go back to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Milley. I had no choice. I worked for a fascist. I had to go be the source on all these books. And I had to call China and make sure that they knew that we weren't going to bomb them because he was so irrational. And the horrible things he said behind the scenes to undermine Donald Trump. At the same time, years later, he's the one watching Joe Biden make terrible decisions or no decisions, shuffle in, probably nod off in front of him, been unable to get him on the phone. You know that's the story. And now Alex Thompson of Axios and Jake Tapper want you to buy the book about the story and the nightmare that we all lived in. We really had no president. We had a bunch of staffers, not even cabinet members, running the country. We had a Secretary of Defense that wasn't healthy enough to do his job, and nobody even knew about it. We thought that Lloyd Austin was getting exposed when it turns out he was in the hospital and didn't tell anyone. You know what was exposing? That the president wasn't even there to be mad. Because he wasn't talking to his Secretary of Defense anyway. You know, his black general, as he referred to him. Unbelievable. If I sound a little aggravated, I'm beyond aggravated. But I'll play some more sound so you know how bad things were. Democrats got to own up to this.
I'm going to pass away.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks so much for being here. Start lining up on the phones. In about 15 minutes, I'll be able to open it up. So much happening. 1-866-408-7669 is the number. Keep in mind, I was up at 5 in the morning Eastern time because President was rolling with the time change and everything. He was rolling. I mean, he was at Qatar, and he goes to Al-Alamein Air Base there, built by the Qataris, by the way. For those people who say we should not be accepting gifts, they built a whole military base for us and pay 60% of all costs because they wanted our military presence there. But having said that, then the president gave a rally-like speech to the men and women there. Pete Hegseth, a fantastic introduction. Then he hopped on a plane and landed in the UAE, where they're doing the pomp and circumstances, displaying their military. And then there's going to have a meeting there where he's going to be talking about $1.4 trillion worth of investment, mostly high tech, mostly in chips, mostly in AI, over the next 10 years with this country. And what the president's doing is saying, let's be allies. I'm not going to get into how you run your country. I'm not going to tell you how to do it. Let's just talk about having an economic relationship. And in the case of Saudi Arabia, and I think all the other two countries, a military one. So we'll take some calls on that, and I'll let you know how it developed. Meanwhile, some big news, and that is Greg Gutfeld's got this great game show. It is on Fox Nation. It is out now, and it is fantastic. It's called Greg Gutfeld's What Did I Miss? We're going to talk to Mike Brown, who was the winner, but they were basically holed up, locked out of the news for a long period of time, and then quizzed on what actually took place. Here is how it sounded as Mike Brown was declared the winner.
Whoa! Yes! 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 Oh, my God. Excellent work. Yes! Nicely done. Thank you, sir.
Nicely done.
Thank you very much.
I'm glad you picked me up.
Yes! That was crazy. Did you know that was the right one the whole time? Oh, he's breaking down. Mike is crying. I get it. Deep breath.
Okay.
Deep breath.
You deserve it. You deserve it, Mike.
That was crazy.
If I were Mike's wife and I was just watching backstage of you crying over me, I would be so turned on.
How you doing,
buddy? Why'd I bring these kids here?
How you doing?
So that is Mike Brown, winner of the Greg Gutfeld, What Did I Miss? After being away from his family for a long period of time, a construction worker from Newcastle, Indiana, pursuing a career in music and entertainment, took a shot with us on Fox Nation and ended up winning. He's got four kids, 19, 16, 13, and 7. And he and his wife been married for 22 years, and they took a break so Mike could do this show. Mike, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here, Brian.
Hey, Mike, I know you just did Fox and Friends, too. Tell everyone what you went through, where you were, and what you agreed to do.
Okay. So we were in upstate New York. They put us in a house out, not exactly in the middle of nowhere, but for us it was. And we agreed to be separated from family, technology, phone, communication, television, be separated from everything, totally disconnected for 90 days and try to build relationships to a degree with the five people that were originally in the house and get along, even though we had some differences, you know, and then come out and work together and build a pot up on the game show and hopefully have somebody, well, not hopefully, but have somebody win. And it ended up being me.
How much did you win?
It ended up being a total of 29,000.
Wow. And you said you're going to donate 10% to your church. Why?
Yes. Yes. I'm being a man of faith and a family of faith. You know, we always try to give God the first part. So he'll get his part and we'll enjoy what's left.
Yeah, absolutely. So plus music, it's tough to make. The most talented people. It's a tough business. Absolutely. And that's what you're doing. How hard was it to be away from your family? What did you find to be the toughest part?
So the toughest part, definitely being away from my family. I missed my son's 16th birthday,
wow.
Valentine's Day with my wife. Like I told others, that was the first one apart. in 22 years. So all of that was tough because we're together a lot. We try to do a lot of things together. We're separate just on little trips every now and then, but not that long. I would say not just being away, but then because you're by yourself in the way the isolation was, and I was the oldest, ended up ending the show being the oldest. I went into it with a little different perspective. So especially a lot of people my age, you hear them sometimes talk about, I wish I could do this over, or I wish I could reset my life, or what I wouldn't give to, you know, have a second start. And so I went into it thinking I'm going to really review my life and look over it. And you slow life down so much that the blind spots that you normally ignore, because we all got them, life moves so fast, you just don't have any, you don't take the time to address them. And the hardest part was looking at all the things that I needed to change and to accept the responsibility that I'm my own biggest problem.
Really? So instead of just trying to win as much money as possible during that time, you do use that as a time of reflection and personal growth. So whether you won the $30,000 or not, you benefited.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. 100%.
So first off, about you, Mike, like for me, it would be torture because I actually love following the news, the storylines. I have to for work, but I love doing it. For me to be isolated for that time would be tough. Did you have a fundamental knowledge of the news and understood where a lot of these stories were going? The election and military and assassinations and things like that?
Yes, I did. I don't follow the news quite like you do and some others, but for years, I've really tried to be involved and be more educated, especially as a Christian. I think a lot of Christians are ignorant to what's really going on. And so I think I've really tried to push myself to understand as much as I can all these different issues. So I was aware of what was going on before we went in, which I kind of held on to and reviewed in my mind throughout the time, just to kind of have hopefully a little bit of that help when we started getting the questions.
Right. And you had some comedians in there. You had Kat Timpf in there and Jamie Lissau was in there. And you had to ask questions and you guys had fun. Here's an example. Cut 39.
Do you think we're in like a war?
I think they would at least let us know.
No.
What? This show would still go on.
They would not let us out of here. Not a chance.
If 48 states were at war, we would still be here.
What if we have 51?
Oh, yeah.
What if we have 51?
Canada.
What if we have 51 states?
We took Canada over now?
I think Greenland is more.
We're going to have 52?
There is some unlikely things that happen at the Trump era. If I was to tell you that we're going to threaten Greenland to take Greenland and the Panama Canal, you must have thought, well, that's a joke. Well, that's what happened. Are you going to say, are we going to threaten to make Canada the 51st state? Well, that's not true. Well, it is true. So some of the stuff that's happened must have stunned you. Anything in particular?
I was one of the first out of the box things that wasn't even addressed on the game show was the Gulf of America. Because I didn't really think that would happen, you know, but you know, here it is. And then from the game show standpoint, the $1 trillion Walmart, the Wall Street crash. I didn't expect that. That kind of took me by surprise. And then the whole sending Katy Perry up into space. I'm like, can't we put money towards something else? Been doing that. So, yes.
All right. Well, off guard. But you made some good friends.
Yes, I did. I actually really enjoyed the other three people that we ended up, you know, finishing the show with. Actually talked to two of them, Sonny and Mark, quite a bit throughout the week. Allegra stays a little more busy than the rest of us with all the stuff she does. So.
Right. Nice. So it was a great experience. I'm so glad you won the money. It's great that you're giving back, and it's good that you you use that time as a personal reflection. I'm just sorry you had to deal with Gutfeld. That's my only regret for you. Mike Brown, congratulations. Great to get to know you. Thanks for the quality time with our audience.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Brian.
All right, you got it. And he is the winner of Greg Gutfeld's inaugural show, What Did I Miss? I'm sure this is coming back again. It was a huge hit, and you can catch it online on Fox Nation. I'm going to come back, and I'm going to take some phone calls. We're also following the latest developments over in UAE. There's a lot of breaking news with the time change during our show. We'll roll with it. P. Diddy trial's happening right now. We'll give you the latest there. And of course, take your calls. And the more scandal and more fallout from Joe Biden's joke of a presidency.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up.
Starting a business can seem like a daunting task, unless you have a partner like Shopify. They have the tools you need to start and grow your business. From designing a website to marketing to selling and beyond, Shopify can help with everything you need. There's a reason millions of companies like Mattel, Heinz, and Allbirds continue to trust and use them. With Shopify on your side, turn your big business idea into... Sign up for your $1 per month trial at shopify.com/special offer.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This has been an amazing trip. We've raised trillions of dollars of investment for our country. And we're dealing with really good people that have been abandoned in a way by our country and by the United States. And we're not going to abandon. We have very good friends in Saudi Arabia and in Qatar. So now we're going to UAE. We're going to be landing shortly. And we have another really good situation there.
And you heard what's going on. I mean, what he's doing is making relationships, making business relationships, and establishing himself in the region. But he's listening. He's not dictating. And I know some people are upset. I mean, I'm looking at some people online, and people I really like say we should be talking about the values and, political prisoners that are there. And I understand that thought. My assumption is, too, it comes up not in front of the cameras. I think a lot of it comes out behind the scenes. Hank, you're over in Virginia. I know you got a big election coming up. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Great. What's on your mind?
What I want to say is the whole thing with Syria, it's been a hotbed for a long time. It's been a mess. So right now, President Trump has got some leverage. We got to remember the Kurds. The Kurds have been loyal to us for a long time.
They're the best.
And they need a home.
They need to be protected. About getting them home, I'd love to get them on a path there and get a portion of Syria. Absolutely. I thought it was fascinating that one of the groups that gives Turkey such a hard time is the PKK, and they disbanded, and they put down their arms. And I don't know what was the story behind that. I'm looking forward to seeing that unfold. Turkey has taken a piece of Syria, and Israel has taken a piece of Syria for security reasons. So he's really controlling this leader, Damascus, and just the surrounding area. And we'll see if there's going to be room for the Kurds, because they are just unbelievably loyal to America, and it's definitely appreciated. I want you to hear the Qatari prime minister talk about the significance of this trip, cut two.
It's a historical visit in itself. It's the first American president coming for a state visit to Qatar in the history. So, of course, the relationship has been ongoing for decades now. And it's on multi-levels, whether it's on the security, defense, economy, investments, energy, and education, and many other areas.
And they say the UAE and Qatar and Saudi Arabia, not Saudi Arabia, I should say, They hope they'll play a role in getting Iran to dismantle everything in their nuclear program. Let's go out to Danny in Israel. Hey, Danny.
Hi, Brian. How are you doing?
How is the perception of the president's trip in Israel?
I think that the media is kind of a little bit upset that Israel looks, it's the visibility that looks... She's out of the deals. She's out of the issue. She's out of the trip. President Trump has decided not to visit Israel. And that's the perception. I'm not with that perception. I think that President Trump is doing a great thing that will also help Israel.
I agree.
The Iranian issue.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. He's making it a Gulf state trip. and what they are all doing. What he's doing with Syria, what he's doing with Qatar, and what he's doing with Saudi Arabia, he's bringing up the Abraham Accords. And what are they? Recognize Israel. Do trade with Israel. I mean, that's the best thing that could ever happen to Israel.
Exactly, Brian. Just one point concerning the Iranian issue. Your analysis, Brian, is an excellent one. However, I think that Witkoff has to pay attention to one crucial point. He's dealing with Shias. He's not dealing with a Western country. And that was exactly Obama's mistake. So Shias understand only the power language, Brian. They are not going to give up. And none of us wants President Trump to fail in this negotiation. So any deal that allows them to enrich uranium is simply a bad deal.
I'm with you, Danny. But you know who else is with you? The whole Senate. I mean, literally the whole Senate. There's no way. I don't see anyone outside Rand Paul who would see anything different than what you just said. I also want them to no longer fund these terror groups, the Houthis, Hamas, and Hezbollah. Is that better not be too much to ask? Right now, we have all the leverage.
Correct. And I don't think that they are going to give up. And I know that the Senate, I heard Senator Graham, he's an excellent one. He's a very supporter of Israel. So that's exactly the point, Brian.
I hear you.
We have to be very careful dealing with the Shias.
Listen, Israel can do it. We just got to provide you guys the bombs and the defensive weapons. Danny, thank you. Patrick, not quite as far away, Oklahoma City, in talking about Ukraine. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, yeah. You know, with all the Trump impeachment stuff that they did when he was out of office, President Clinton actually signed a U.S.-Ukraine treaty.
I know.
Basically allowing the United States, you know, to go ahead and talk about legal matters and that kind of stuff. And I'm surprised that nobody basically had that as a talking point.
What do you mean allow them to talk about this? They said if you give up your nukes, the Russia and the U.S. said if you give up your nukes, we will provide you security. And Russia ends up invading their country, and we give them blankets and MREs.
Well, and there's no accountability. I mean, it's like, well, you've got the I can't remember his name. The guy up there in Ukraine. I mean, he's got like $400 billion, or you know, who knows? You know, and there's no accountability where that money's gone.
Well, I will say this, Patrick. People say this over and over again. There is no proof he's taken $1 outside his salary. If anyone thinks there's glory in running Ukraine and that he's running this country because he wants to be rich, I think you have to think extremely negative about this guy. I just don't have those feelings. There's no benefit to Zelensky giving up a lucrative acting career to go into politics, be separated from his family, countless assassinations on his life, have to go around the world begging for money to sustain the country, and knowing that while these people are fighting, they're fighting for him, they're fighting on decisions he has made, and there are also many of him are friends that he has. I mean, please tell me the glory in that, that he's socking away American money. You have to have a real low opinion of him, and I just don't have it. I think the guy's been extraordinary in the line of fire, and the reason why he doesn't shut down churches, he shuts down the Russian Orthodox Church, because sadly, they're a espionage arm for Russia. So there's two narratives, that Zelensky's stealing money and he's shutting down religion, and he doesn't want elections. He doesn't. It's unconstitutional in Ukraine to have elections during a war. And if he had elections, he's got 62% approval rating. He would win. He would win. So please push back on people that just make stuff up. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. Big show coming your way. I definitely want to take your calls, but we have Josh Krashauer at the bottom of the hour. I'll talk to him. He's an insider, political insider, Fox News Radio political analyst. Mark Thiessen, Washington Post, Fox News contributor. He is also an important person at AEI. That's how he's introduced. And we are following the president's trip and his last leg, a lot of pomp and circumstances, which I know he loves. Now he's in his last stop at the UAE, United Arab Emirates, right after coming from Qatar this morning and giving what I think was an hour speech, which would have been probably on the teleprompter 15 minutes. He had a great time in front of the troops. A lot accomplished before, and I'll talk about that with Mark, but let's get to the big three.
Number three.
I know many Iranians living in New York and Washington, D.C., and they're great people, and we want to have this end peacefully, not horribly.
Maybe.
They have to move quickly.
Right. On the brink, Iran indicates movement on the nuke program, but are they just stringing us along? Did Steve Witkoff actually give them a proposal to take back? There's conflicting reports on that. Russia and Ukraine, not direct talks. Zelensky shows up, Putin doesn't.
Number two.
But at other times, it seemed the inner circle was doing everything they could to hide the extent to which Biden was diminished. The third cabinet secretary told me they were shocked by how the president was acting. He seemed, quote, disoriented and, quote, out of it.
Out of it. Yeah, they all knew it. You and I knew we were out of it. Joe Biden probably didn't know he was out of it, but he was out of it. Not running the country. Eight cabinet meetings in 4 years. Needed never even talking during the meetings. And by the way, they had to give him questions to ask. And cabinet secretaries, nameless, but there's only so many, said that they basically felt he was protected by his staff. They couldn't get to him.
Number one.
There's this piece written this morning about all of these Biden administration officials that are watching this with shock and awe. And they said, here's one quote. When his personal instincts, Trump's, coincide with national interests, it's pretty remarkable how quickly he can move. That is a Biden official watching this in awe.
Final stop of the president's overseas trip. Major impact already. Let's talk about that with Mark Thiessen. Mark, how would you rate the trip?
It's a home run. He's doing great. He's gotten lots of investment. He's shored up our relations with our Gulf allies. I think he's doing great. I mean, but again, there's a lot of stuff that's in the air right now. That's not like this Iran deal. Very worried about the possibility that we might allow them to keep centrifuges, keep enrichment. So Iran, as Trump has said, Iran has no need for civilian nuclear power. They've got all the oil they need to power their country. I want him to do this peacefully if he can, but he has no reason to make any concessions to the Iranians. They are weak. They're weaker than they've ever been since the 1979 revolution. As he likes to say, they have no cards. He has all the cards, so play the cards.
So do you think Steve Witkoff went out on his own and said you have to enrich to a low level? Because that was the report, and I interviewed a staffer today in the communications department with the White House, and I asked him in the break, I go, is this true? Is this NBC report true that they'll be allowed to enrich just to a low level? And he said, I haven't heard that. Then after the segment, I got word from the White House, not true.
Yeah. There's a thing that's going on here with where the president has a very clear policy, and then sometimes his staff doesn't seem to be on the same page as he is. Trump has said repeatedly, total dismantlement of their program. Total dismantlement means, and we know exactly what total dismantlement looks like. I wrote a column about this in the Post last week. Total dismantlement is what we did with Libya, where we sent in U.S. planes, loaded up all the centrifuges on them, loaded up all the uranium, destroyed their ballistic missiles, and took it all away. And it's sitting in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, at the U.S. National Laboratory in Oak Ridge. That's what total dismantlement looks like, allowing them to keep centrifuges and enriching to 3.4% or whatever the hell it is. That's not total dismantlement, because they're going to cheat on that. They cannot have, there cannot, at the end of this process, there cannot be a single centrifuge in Iran. Period. Full stop. That's the definition of success. I think that's where Trump is, but I don't understand why Witkoff is not on the same page with the president.
Here is Mohammed bin Abdulrahim Al Thani. He's the Qatari prime minister on where we're at with these nuclear talks. Cut 21.
All of us, we agree that we want a nuclear-free region, and we cannot afford a nuclear race in that region, but we need this to be resolved diplomatically. Iran has its right to have a civilian nuclear power while not also representing any challenge or any threat for anyone in the region.
What do they need nuclear power for? They care about the environment? Please.
Yeah, they have no right to anything that Donald Trump says they don't have a right to, period. You know, this is the world's premier sponsor of state sponsor of terror. Until Al-Qaeda come along, they killed more Americans through terror than any other terrorist operation in the world. They just tried to launch ballistic missile attacks on Israel. This is not. Can you imagine if you just look at their malign behavior and imagine that they had a nuclear weapon, what the Middle East would look like? It's impossible. And so they gravely miscalculated. They gave the green light to Hamas to carry out the October 7th attacks. And what has happened in the last 19 months? They've lost both of their terrorist proxies. Hamas and Hezbollah have been absolutely decimated by Israel. They've lost their number one Arab ally, which was Syria, where the leader of Syria is now meeting with President Trump, trying to create relations with the United States instead of Iran. That means they've lost their entire pipeline going from Iran through Syria into Lebanon, Gaza, and the West Bank. So their arms pipeline to their terrorist proxies has been shut down. Trump is crushing their economy with maximum pressure sanctions on their oil and gas industry. And they've lost their ballistic missile capability and their air defenses because when their failed attack happened on Israel, Israel responded by taking those capabilities out. They're strategically naked, and they are incapable of effective retaliation against us for a military strike. When your enemy is that weakened, they don't have a right to anything. They have a right to what we tell them they have a right to. And Donald Trump needs to press a tough deal that says, you either give this up or we're taking it away. And the problem is, in the first term, they saw that he was willing to use military force. He now seems to be surrounded by people who don't want to use military force, and people start sensing that. And they start feeling like, he really doesn't want to attack us. He doesn't want this to do this. And he says it in a way like, I'd prefer to do this peacefully. I don't want to attack them, but I will. And I think they're doubting his willingness to actually carry out a military strike.
I want you to hear what Brent Sadler said. Cut nine.
Well, it's a combination of America actually having a very clear articulation of its interest in President Trump, and that's been absent for far too long, but also backed up with force. And the last time we actually saw this type of opening in the Middle East, it was in the months after the September 11th attacks in 2001. That window closed. Yeah. So the question is, how long will this window and opportunity stay open? And this leadership that President Trump is demonstrating right now be able to push things forward to a positive conclusion? It's Iran's on its back foot. Russia's preoccupied. China has economic issues and has its aspirations refocusing into Asia. So there is a window here, and we're seeing some of the response to that in partners like Saudi Arabia to a new approach from America.
And if you could just finish off the one problem, child, right now with an 85-year-old Grand Ayatollah who's hated by his people. I'm talking about 80%. They say 80% of the Iranian people hate this regime. So why would we prop them up by giving them a life preserver? What have they done to deserve that except to try to assassinate our leaders?
Nothing. And yeah, they had an active assassination plot against Donald Trump. I mean, one of the reasons, you know, we don't have they haven't disclosed why the ceremony was moved inside the Capitol. But one of the reasons was security. So, you know, this is a regime that was trying to kill Donald Trump a few months ago. They have a right to nothing. They have a right to whatever we tell them they have a right to. It should be very simple. We can do this the easy way or the hard way, but you're not going to get a nuclear weapon, period. And one of the things that I like about Donald Trump that I particularly appreciate about him is lots of presidents say things and then don't do them. You know, we had four presidents who said, we're going to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, and then they didn't do it. Trump actually is the president who actually does the things that everyone says they're going to do. And so he has said Iran is not going to get a nuclear weapon. Every president before, five presidents before him have said that. He can be the one who actually delivers it. He'd prefer to do it peacefully, but he can do it with military force.
So here we are with this plane situation. Now, keep in mind, as we talk about Qatar, they built our military base. They pay 60% of all the costs. Nobody has a problem with that. But the president's saying, we got offered a $400 million plane. He said, now there's a huge problem with it. I know you wrote a story about it. He could do it, but he shouldn't. But I want you to hear what Qatar, I asked Caroline Levitt, what do they want in return? Are you concerned that when you give someone a $400 million gift, they're going to want something? She says, no, But here's the prime minister explaining it when he found out how controversial his offer was. Cut 15.
I see that this story is making a big story in the news. Look, we've been always there for the U.S. We've been a reliable ally for the U.S. And it's something between the Ministry of Defense in Qatar and the Department of Defense. And it's in the discussion between them and under legal review. Unfortunately, I see that this story is taking a different direction and is being more politicized while it's a normal government-to-government deal. First of all, we bought this airplane from an American company. It's basically part of a cooperation that we've been doing a lot together in between Qatar and the United States. So I don't see a point out of this.
So Boeing made it. And we're going to just give it away for $400 million. Does it make you feel better about it?
Yeah. So first of all, if this was Australia, no one would be complaining. It's absolutely legal what Trump is doing. We during the Gulf War we set up a mechanism through which the United States, the Department of Defense, can accept in kind and financial contributions from any individual, any government, or any international organization, and that's still on the books. So a foreign government can give us defense articles to the a plane. You know, all that, they can give that to the United States Department of Defense. There's no legal obstacle to doing this. There's also no legal obstacle to sending it to the library. The Ronald Reagan's Air Force One is in Simi Valley. Richard Nixon's Marine One is at his library in California as well. It would be unusual for the president to continue to use the plane as opposed to displaying it, but that's not illegal. The problem isn't the donation, it's the donor. Qatar is a country that plays both sides. They are the premier sponsor and protector of terrorist networks throughout the Middle East. This is where Hamas has its headquarters. This is where Ismail Haniyeh, the leader of Hamas, who planned the October 7th attacks, he did it from his luxury home in Qatar. He did it where all of his billions of dollars of ill-gotten wealth was. They're in business with Iran. They're in business with this is where the Taliban leaders, exiled Taliban leaders, are living. They play both sides. Al Jazeera, their network, is the premier spreader of Islamic radical ideology. They put on people who defend suicide bombings, who attack Israel, who spread anti-Semitism and anti-Americanism. So they're playing it both ways. That's fine. It's good to have a country that's an intermediary with the bad guys of the world, but we shouldn't be taking a presidential aircraft.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to see where this goes, because as usual, when things are happening and they're good for Trump, they'll try to find something negative, and all the other networks will focus on the plane instead of the deals, the relations, the nuclear program, Syria recognition, Israel and Gaza, whatever. You got some real good intellectual topics, good conversations, good. You know what? Good points on both sides. We're not bringing up democracy. We're not bringing up freedom. They said, you know, you run your country, we'll run ours. A lot of, you know, that's worthy of debate. You know, that's different than what you used to say in the past. And I'll take both sides of that and have a great conversation. But if you're going to focus on the plane, that is a story that doesn't line up with the other stories in magnitude. It is pure anti-Trumpism.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but it's one that we're, you know,
it's a preventable
bringing
one.
On because it's a preventable one. It's
but
exactly
but how about
right.
this? Does he bring up a good point that the plane is 50 years old and Boeing's not going to deliver until 2035?
Well, that's the other scandal. It's like how can it be that we have an aircraft manufacturer that can't produce an Air Force One on a reasonable time frame for the that he wouldn't have to be accepting a plane from Qatar if Boeing had done its job. These planes were supposed to be delivered in 2024. Like, you know,
yes.
I guess they needed to wait for the extra bolts to come in so that the door didn't fly off when the president was in the air. You know, I mean, Boeing is a disgrace. And by the way, Donald Trump, despite the fact that they couldn't deliver Air Force One, just got them a 200 plane deal with the Saudis.
Yes.
Biggest aircraft deal in history. So he's doing a great job for Boeing. Boeing is not doing a great job for him. And he wouldn't need this plane if Boeing had done its job.
Mark Thiessen, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Take care.
All right. Bottom of the hour, Josh Krasauer is with us, Fox News Radio political analyst. And then we'll take some calls in between. We did not talk about Joe Biden. I want to talk about that with Josh. I also want to talk about Ukraine and Russia. Zelensky, I'm telling you right now, every day he's winning Trump over a little bit more.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So NBC's got this story out that the administration pushed back on, Axios says. Senior advisor to Khomeini said that Iran is prepared to sign a deal that allows it to enrich only to the lower levels needed for civilian use and requires it give up all the stockpiles of highly enriched uranium with inspections verifying compliance in exchange for lifting all sanctions. Can't have it. I mean, I hope this is not real. I mean, the administration pushed back on it, but it said Witkoff briefed the UN Security Council last Wednesday and described the U.S. That means more than one person. And described the U.S. proposal as elegant and very big, but stressed more progress was needed in the negotiations, according to minutes of the meeting shared with Axios and confirmed by another source. Witkoff and other officials giving contrasting answers as to whether and to what extent Iran will be able to enrich uranium. This is not hard. I think he's probably a nice guy. I don't feel confident with him leading this. Sandra in New Jersey. Hey, Sandra.
Oh, good morning, Brian. I was concerned about Trendy Arugua. I have trouble saying
TDA.
It, but I think I said it. Okay. They're taking on another form that I'm noticing. I read that they train their young
yep.
to form. This is scary. You could be walking in the streets and you don't know now. You have to watch out for the little kids, too. This 12, this 15-year-old has a 12 dozen busts on him already, and he attacked a 16-year-old autistic child.
Yep.
And then we learn what they did in a prison. They barricaded themselves, this group, and they tried to take the ICE officers hostage. This is scary stuff.
Well, put it this way, because we don't arrest minors. I mean, we got to get these guys out. The minute they commit a crime, I don't care if they're nine. Goodbye. You're committing a crime, you're pickpocketing people, you usually work with older kids, you're gone. And what happened is they're training them here. They show up in the hotels, usually single-parent situations. They got their older brother's actually a gangster. Josh Krasauer next.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And it was not just cabinet members who were kept away from the president. Aides who had once seen Biden regularly say they went months without seeing him. Others told us that in some meetings, Biden would mumble incoherently, something the public only got glimpses of.
It is used to make the brew beer in his final.
The first cabinet secretary we spoke with told us they thought at some point these restrictions were about control. Yes, the president is making the decisions, but if the inner circle is shaping them in such a way, is it really a decision, they told us? Are they leading him to something?
I get more outraged every time I hear this. And to think that Bill Malusian or Peter Ducey or one of our reporters isn't breaking this story because we were shielded from it and denied it and they told us we were crazy. And we're overdoing it and playing partisan politics. And they sat in that press room and nobody asked a tough question of Joe Biden, like, where are you? Where is the president? How come your press secretary never says anything of worth? We all know about protecting and spinning, but you never said anything. And now that, right, this is the third or fourth book about how empty the Oval Office was. Josh Krasauer joins us from Fox News Radio, political analyst, editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider. Josh, your thoughts about, of all people, Jake Tapper telling us this story.
So, Brian, how many times did we talk about over the literally years,
yes.
well before this was in the polls, that when you're closer to 90 years old at the end of any theoretical second term, that just doesn't make any sense to an average American, that it just was politically untenable. And apparently it was tenable to all of the people around Joe Biden in the White House, from Jill Biden, from Dr. Jill, down to his political inner circle. And it stuns me. I mean, it was one of the most flagrant acts of political malpractice I've seen in my years of covering politics. But there's also the media angle to it as well, which is that, you know, why was this not the dominant story? I mean, we talked about it. It was sort of if you look at a poll, you could see that was a dominant issue in the eyes of voters. But for some reason, this was not the dominant story heading into 2023, 2024, when he was fully on board running and trying to scare anyone who was thinking about challenging him, including poor Dean Phillips, in a primary away. So it is remarkable looking back at that period. I mean, if you weren't watching Fox, you were blind to the obvious reality of what was happening. And it is a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking from people who were in the White House or people on the sidelines who bit their tongue and didn't say what was obvious to many other people. But that's why Joe Biden ended up having to withdraw from the race. That's why Kamala Harris lost as badly as she did. And it still is dogging the Democratic Party. I mean, I still am actually kind of stunned, Brian, that when you hear Chuck Schumer or other Democratic senators that are being asked about the revelations in the book, they don't seem to have like a really coherent response either, even to this day. And if you're going to run for president in 2028, if you're Pete Buttigieg, if you're anyone else, you're going to have to explain. I mean, I think anyone who was in that cabinet, in that inner circle, is going to be devalued as a candidate because they were there and they didn't speak up.
You know, it's so interesting. You know, when I see this story, I'm thinking, I'm bored of the story until I read it. And then I read it, and I get so outraged by it. And being by the way, there's no people going back and saying I missed some clues. They intentionally missed it. They regret that they intentionally missed it. But don't say that they pulled the wool over your eyes. I mean, give yourself a little bit more credit. That was a choice. So here's Chuck Schumer being confronted about this story, and they want to move on. But you can't move on and ask for our trust if you're not going to acknowledge your role in this. Cut 27.
Do you think Biden deserves the blame for the loss in 2020?
Look. 2024. Katie, we're looking forward. We're looking forward.
That's very backward looking. I don't really want to review all of it because it's past history.
We're not looking backward. We're looking forward at this particular moment in time.
We're looking forward.
Facing all of this because you lost a presidential election. And is that not Joe Biden's responsibility for deciding to run again?
We're looking forward.
We're not in the History Channel. I'm not interested in going backwards in time. I'm interested in going forward.
Well, the thing is, it's not your it's not your option. You lied. You covered up. If you for some reason believed he was okay making decisions, just didn't want to see you, then you should be furious at his inner circle who duped you in a way that you didn't think was possible. Remember, you know, when we hear about Woodrow Wilson and that he had that stroke and that his wife took over, Edith took over for him, we thought that would never happen again. This is worse.
Yeah, history repeats itself. We like to think we're in modern times and things that happened in the past can't repeat themselves. Think again. We are in sort of a very 1920s moment, if you will. I don't agree with all those senators, Schumer included, that this is not going to be an issue going forward. I think if you're a Democratic candidate in 2028, this goes straight to the heart of your credibility. So if you were one of those Democrats who was in denial or said all the politically, attuned things and not acknowledging reality in running for president, I think it raises questions about your credibility on a whole host of other issues. I think when you look at where the party's going to be down the road, it's going to be someone who's not from the past. It's not going to be Kamala Harris. It's probably not going to be Pete Buttigieg. People who have that association with Biden, who has become something of a discredited figure. I mean, I thought he was going to be doing a media tour. He was on BBC, then he went on The View, and it was the View appearance, especially the live appearance, was such a mess that it underscored the allegations that were in the book and that everyone's been talking about for so long, that he hasn't done any other appearances since then. So, I mean, this is a real problem, and it goes to the heart of the party's credibility. I think Democrats realize they need someone younger and an outsider from the mess of the last, 4 years that are not going to be tainted by that baggage.
Josh, the thing is, how many big decisions were made by people that were unelected, 28-year-old staffers we don't know? how many big decisions did Joe, maybe the ones that Joe Biden made. We know about the Afghanistan, the minutes of these meetings, how he was the only one insistent that we're getting out. That's it. We're getting out. Generals would testify that they told him this would happen. And he did it anyway when he got to a certain soldier threshold. And how ironic it is that General Milley says that Trump's a fascist and we maybe should take the 25th Amendment into the fold. And they don't think about taking the 25th Amendment with a guy that sits in a meeting with his jaw open and doesn't say anything. Some people thought he was dead. Here's Ro Khanna in 2023 and 2024. Cut 29.
Biden seeking re-election.
Absolutely.
I've seen the president twice in the last 2 weeks. I've had a conversation with him. He's completely mentally sharp. When the president is out there, he's at his best. Have him debate in the general election. I don't think Donald Trump will.
I have spoken with the president. He is fully coherent. He is on top of details when I have talked to him.
So the question is, did he lie? Cut 30.
Were you telling the truth back then?
I was. I have met him a few times at public events, and he was. But, of course, I didn't have the full picture. I mean, I met him maybe two times on rope lines and at public events. And I do think it's important that, given what has come out, that we take accountability. Obviously, he should not have run. We should be clear to say that. Obviously, there should have been an open primary. And I don't think that's very difficult. A Democrat should just be straight up that he should not have run now that we know all of the facts.
See, they're missing the point. He was going to lose. But the thing is, he shouldn't be in office when it was clear he couldn't do the job and there's so much at stake. Think about the mess that we're in, the weakness that China was able to observe. Russia saying this opportunity, seeing what happened with Afghanistan, hearing that the inflation was transitory. Instead of saying, well, that president has got this report card like Jimmy Carter or Ronald Reagan. Instead, we say we had no president. Who was making those decisions? Why are we in this mess? What else aren't you not telling us?
Well, and I think one part of the story, which I think is also the media part of the story, that there was a candidate running, a very respectable candidate, a swing district Democrat by the name of Dean Phillips, who had a message that there needs to be a change, generational change. And also he was running specifically on concerns about Biden's acuity and health. And not only did he you know, obviously get rejected by the Democratic rank and file and was sort of pretended that he didn't exist, but look at the media coverage of the there was virtually no coverage. Dean Phillips was essentially blacklisted from a lot of the airwaves because that message, they didn't want that message. They didn't want Trump to get elected, didn't want that message to be heard, and ultimately did the Democratic Party a disservice. Dean Phillips' message was ahead of its time, ahead of the curve. It was really in line with where I think a lot of Democratic voters were, even Democratic rank and file voters saw this. And yet his message was sort of, you know, depressed, suppressed. That's a shame because that people are saying the obvious now, but they had an opportunity to do so when there was an open chance at a primary and they suppressed that message.
They did. And we'll see. Now, Jake Tapper, of all people, said I could have done a better job of finding out. Really? You saw that interaction with Larry Trump when she brought it up. He basically scolded her. How dare you bring that up? You're not qualified to talk about Joe Biden's mental health. Anybody was qualified to tell about Joe Biden's mental health. And the thing is, you just don't have any trust. So unless you're going to come out there and admit your role, you look the other way. I also look at that press room. How many times Peter Ducey made him think for himself? He asked good, concise questions that we were thinking, but nobody else said, I demand to see the president. He doesn't do interviews. He never comes out. He doesn't seem to understand what's going on. We don't know where he is. The press room didn't even demand that. Compare that to a Trump. He's literally on television 10 hours a day. He'll have fights in front of with world leaders in front of the press. We didn't see this guy ever.
Yeah, and it became very apparent, especially towards the end of the last year or two of the presidency, where Biden's appearances were few and far between. And as this book documents, and as we talked about at the time, there was reporting, a little bit of reporting at the time, that I think it was Alex Thompson who wrote that his schedule is like banker's hours from 10 to 4, right? I mean, we always talk about what happens if there's a 2 a.m. phone call that a president needs to deal with. Well, apparently Biden was not at full speed outside of banker's hours.
I'm ready. You couldn't handle a 10 a.m. call. So, Josh, I want to move on to the president's trip. So impactful, obviously a thick agenda. He's working 20 hours a day. Time zones haven't affected him. You've seen the pomp and circumstances. He had a 15-minute speech, ended up being an hour speech today. Then it's on to his third country. Your assessment of what you're seeing?
Well, look, I think this is a very significant trip, especially when it comes to what the Trump administration's foreign policy in the Middle East is going to be like for the rest of the term. Trump is talking about business deals. He's talking about a new start to the region, but there's also a lot of really hot conflicts that are taking place. There's negotiations over Iran's nuclear program, which I think there are a lot of concerns about. And there's a question whether Trump is going to try to strike a deal at all costs or take a more muscular and tough approach as he did in the first term. There's questions over the Houthis, and they still continue to be a menace in the region, despite the fact that we're not going after them anymore. There's a question about Qatar and its role, even though, you know, Trump had a pretty chummy visit. They play a pretty negative role in a lot of spaces, including in their funding of things here in the United States. So I think there's an opportunity. There's a lot of opportunity for diplomacy and business relationships and a new start that Trump certainly was highlighting on the trip. But there's still a lot of conflicts taking place, behind the scenes, or not necessarily behind the scenes, but right front and center. And how those situations get resolved or not resolved is really going to have a lot to do with how this trip is remembered.
Your thoughts about recognizing or lifting sanctions on the Syrian government?
Look, I think the challenge. I think in theory that it makes sense to, you know, to, as Ronald Reagan famously said, trust but verify. That there has been some cautious optimism about the new Syrian government, even though its leader was once affiliated with Al Qaeda. But I think that the worry, based on some of the reporting I've seen, is that this decision was made without a lot of consultation with the national security team, with a lot of the experts that had they wanted to actually get things out of the Syrian government. That you're not going to support terrorism. You're going to punish people who are the jihadists still in the country, and be more aggressive against those factions. I think Trump probably could have been taken. And I know there was Carolyn Leavitt sort of laid out sort of what they were looking for, but I don't think those things were actually signed and conceptualized as part of a deal. So they seem to have removed the sanctions without getting a whole lot in return. I think it's normal to kind of want to work with the Syrian government that seems to be more sane than its predecessors. But there's a lot of trusting that has to be done and a lot of verifying that probably is essential before you do the trust.
I think what's interesting, I want you to hear what Moaz Mustafa said. I don't know if you've dealt with him before. He's Syrian, but lived here for a while. He's an American now, but has been going back and forth with this new government. And he's, you know, Trey Yingst has benefited from his contacts now that you can go into Damascus. He's with the Syrian Emergency Task Force. He is thrilled. Cut 13.
Incredibly significant. The decision and the meeting. The president of the United States in his first term and in this term was the only American president between three different administrations, Obama, Biden, and President Trump, that actually did anything to stop the chemical weapons attacks against the Syrian children, to pass legislation that's like the Caesar Act to hold these war criminals accountable and push back against Iran and Assad and Hezbollah and Russia. And today, what President Trump has done is now kept Syria away from China, Russia, Iran. It is now helping make sure Syria is an ally that will be an important and influential ally of the United States.
I mean, they don't control all of Syria yet. He's got a small port. He doesn't have all of it. But your thoughts about his assessment?
Well, I'm cautiously optimistic. I think Israel is a little more worried about, especially on the southern border of Syria, where there have been some crimes, again, war crimes potentially against the Druze population there, and worries about the Golan. So Israel's a little more worried and concerned, even though I think there is some degree of hope that there's a new era in Syria. And then there's also the Kurds in the northeast who are also wary about the new government. So I think it's a very a lot of different tribes, a lot of different groups in the country. It's really going to be challenging to keep them all together. I think there have been some very encouraging notes, but I think the question is, you want to get guarantees before you lift sanctions, or maybe lift some sanctions and then see what happens down the road. And there was a lot of optimism. I hope the realities on the ground match that up.
I just want the Russians out and the Iranians staying out. That would be a huge benefit. Then the Russians virtually be out of the Middle East. It would be amazing. Josh Krasshour, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
The Qatari government gifting Donald Trump a $400 million private jet to use as Air Force One is so corrupt that even Putin would give a double take.
Right. That is Chuck Schumer. They want to dig in on the plane, not talk about the relations or what's happening with Iran. But the $400 million plane has been a point of contention. Is it legal? I think it's probably is legal. It's going to go to the Pentagon. President will use. I think if the Boeing can play a role and just say, hey, here's a figure, president could go, you know what? We're going to lease it. I don't know if it's going to be worth it. Let's just lease it. It's a I'm an Air Force One, 50-year-old. But for the most part, I think it would do well to get Boeing to pick up the pace so it gets done within his term. I'm pretty sure they could build a plane quickly, I thought. Somebody wrote this to me. Richard writes and says, Brian, have you thought about this? The president of the United States is being escorted by planes from other countries into their country, from Saudi Arabia to Qatar, now UAE. One rogue foreign pilot could be a disaster. That's true, but I assume they thought that through. But they did meet him in the air, and Sean Hannity, who's on board Air Force One, was able to take pictures, and we were able to send him out. It's pretty amazing because you could see the pilots' faces, and they're able to look right into the plane as the president's now in UAE.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. We have a lot going on today. The president's in the Middle East. He's making his way back home eventually. A lot happening. Brett Baer has done some great coverage flying with the press. He's going to be with us in 34 minutes. Bhatia Unger Sargon is here, fresh off her appearance on another network last night, which I watched the repeat this morning. Columnist at the Free Press and author of Second Class. We have a lot happening. I mean, believe it or not, there's things happening locally, like the big, beautiful bill being passed here, and more good news on the economy in terms of money it takes to produce items. The money actually went down. The price went down. So another good economic indicator. Yet, the market hasn't really responded. Speculation from the Wall Street experts say part of the reason is they're just waiting to see if this bill is going to get passed to make these tax cuts permanent and I guess revamp and add some other sweeteners to it. That's what they're debating, but it's all Republicans debating with Republicans. Before we get to Bhatia, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
I know many Iranians living in New York and Washington, D.C., and they're great people, and we want to have this end peacefully, not horribly. They have to move quickly.
Iran on the brink. There's indications now there's movement on their nuke program, but are they just stringing us along? And is it in fact true that they've gotten an offer from Stephen Witkoff that they are considering? I hope not, because the offer looks way too nice. Meanwhile, Russia and Ukraine, not so direct talks in Turkey. We'll discuss.
Number two.
But at other times, it seemed the inner circle was doing everything they could to hide the extent to which Biden was diminished. The third cabinet secretary told me they were shocked by how the president was acting. He seemed, quote, disoriented and, quote, out of it.
Yeah, you think? Who knew? Who knew? What a shocker. Yeah, you all knew. And no one was even curious. And you're upset now that now we all know that you know. But what's staggering is now you're trying to make money off that you know. Follow that up. We'll talk about the cover-up and why they have to totally come clean in order to have any hope of being trusted again.
Number one.
There's this piece written this morning about all of these Biden administration officials that are watching this with shock and awe. And they said, here's one quote. When his personal instincts, Trump's, coincide with national interests, it's pretty remarkable how quickly he can move. That is a Biden official watching this in awe.
Yeah, because they had a guy that couldn't do anything. Bhatia Unger Sargon will comment on that. It's the final stop for the president. First overseas trip, making a major impact over in the Middle East. And what he's saying is, essentially, I need some investment. Investment, that means working together. I just don't want money. We'll work together on various projects. What do you need? You need AI. You want high tech, and we'll give you that. And you want military. We'll make you that. You'll pay for that. And it turns to trillions of dollars. Three separate Arab nations, very oil rich. He also had this theme. No more messages on how to live and recognize Israel. That, along with some surprises, is a typical Trump trip. Bhatia, how would you rate the president's trip?
Thank you so much for having me, Brian. It's so great to be here with you. I think this was the most momentous foreign policy speech and visit of my lifetime. And it's utterly astonishing, although should not be surprising, that the mainstream liberal media has had an absolute blackout on the massive achievements. Not only has the president gotten over $2 trillion in investment committed from Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and let's see what the UAE promises, but the speech that he gave in Riyadh is an epoch-defining speech. If you had the Obama speech from 2009, where he said, you know, there's no contradiction between Islam and the West because everybody wants the same things. Everybody wants to live in a liberal democracy and you share those values. And that defined the failures of the democratic approach to foreign policy. And you had the sort of neocon forever wars of the Bush administration, which defined that era. Donald Trump has repudiated both of those. And what he is effectively saying is we are going to put America first. And what we want from our allies across the globe is economic partnership and partnership in peace. What he wants to see is sovereign, strong allies who bring something to the table, who fight terrorists for us and invest in American workers. That is the formula. And this is going to define the next 100 years in terms of American foreign policy. It was an utterly astonishing, amazing moment. And that's why the media won't cover it.
So you're not looking past the fact that Saudi Arabia has most of the hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. You're not working past the fact that that they had the Wahhabi form of Islam that gave us bin Laden. And what you're saying is, yes, that was then. There's a sign that this is now. So when it comes to Qatar, you're not looking past the fact that Hamas still is very comfortable there, and so does Iran. But at the same time, Israel also works through through Doha, and they still have our fantastic air bases there that they built for us and that they pay 60% of all the costs for. You're saying even though there's downside to the way they conduct their business, you think it's necessary to turn the page and treat it as business?
First of all, if Howard Lutnick can go to Saudi Arabia and put that behind him, lost his brother and 600 employees in 9/11, I think we can really take a lesson from that. The question is not, should we be adjudicating the morality of the world? The question is, how can we put America first? And that means, by definition, respecting the sovereignty and the values of other countries, even if they are not ours, which they definitely are not. I think Saudi Arabia has made tremendous strides in the last few decades. They clearly want to be part of a more westernized world.
Although MBS does.
MBS does. His Vision 2030 plan for Saudi Arabia, which is how they are going to remain solvent, depends on it. Of course, Qatar are state sponsors of terrorism. I don't want to diminish that. I don't think we should have an air base there. I don't know why it's there. I think there are many other places that would be a better place for it. I don't like seeing them as a major player on the global stage. But what I do like to see is them coming to Donald Trump and showing him respect and vowing to invest in the American worker. And hopefully what we will get out of that is, I mean, what President Trump asked the Saudis to do, which is to take on fighting ISIS in Syria and take over those prisons.
So Alex Gray was a NSC chief of staff for President Trump. And he said this about his trip last night. Cut 8.
We spent 25 years with American politicians only thinking about the Middle East in terms of conflict and chaos.
Yeah.
And you have Donald Trump bringing an entirely new perspective, which is let's make the Middle East something that can be viable, commercial, that can be prosperous, that can be peaceful, and that can further America's strategic and economic interests. Not just a place where we expend resources and lose lives, but a place where Americans can help make the region prosperous, and we can actually make some money, too. And this is he is seeing a win-win Middle East for the first time in decades. And that's exactly what we want from our president, strategic foresight.
And also, he's building up personal relationships. And I think even in today's high-tech age, you can't put a price on that. To be able to say, hey, by the way, we're not even talking oil and gas, which is fascinating, isn't it? We're not talking about OPEC. We're not talking about, you know, keep up production, keep down production. This is how much control. That's what Joe Biden went over there for, the pariah nation. He went to visit because the price of oil was too high. Inflation was too high.
And by the way, they said no to him.
Right. And they said, let me think about it. No, I'm not going to give you an answer. So he left empty handed with a fist bump. So now It's a phone call. It's a relationship. It's not necessarily leverage. You know, what is going on over there? You know, get somebody on the phone. Who are the players? So I think the president knew these people before, but now he knows them a lot better. And we'll see what happens, especially if they start going through. What I found out, Bhatti, is I don't have the resources to be able to find out if they're going to fulfill their promise. But I guess they only put in $90 billion and they pledged $100 million. Like, there's a lot that they didn't do that they pledged to do.
First of all, ladies, get yourselves a man who looks at you the way MBS looks at Trump, okay?
That's all, I mean, the beatific smile.
Yeah, although I have to say, I feel like it was more going in one direction. But yes, that bromance is alive and well. To your point, Brian, the investment, Trump doesn't see the Middle East as defined by, you know, Jew versus Muslim or Shia versus Sunni. He is not interested in adjudicating the beefs of these mullahs. He sees it as, are you going to go with Grok or are you going to go with, you know, OpenAI, right? And to wit, as a sign of the peace to come, both Sam Altman and Elon Musk were on the trip together. So already bringing peace, you know, to that beef right there. Yeah, he sees this as a major opportunity for the United States and for the Middle East. Peace through strength. And as Katie Pavlich keeps saying, peace through commerce.
Right. So what is your take? Iran is something different. We have to get them to totally dismantle and not spin their centrifuges and not enrich uranium. Simply can't be done. We all know they don't need nuclear power. Here's what Ali Shabkani said. He is a aide to the Grand Ayatollah. This we said to Richard Engel. It looks like they're considering doing something in Iran. Cut 20.
Today, we sat down with Ali Shabkani, the military, political, and nuclear advisor to Iran's supreme leader. He said Iran also wants a deal.
Yes, we are ready.
Shabkani is one of the few people in Iran authorized to speak about the sensitive negotiations.
We can definitely have better relations with the U.S.
Your thoughts?
It's a really interesting moment. Obviously, Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. Trump was very clear about that in his speech. He also called them thugs. He said that they are responsible for much of the bloodshed in the Middle East.
They're trying to kill him still.
They're still trying to kill him. He's such a forgiving person, by the way. I would not go and make a deal with people who are trying to kill me or had tried to kill me in the past. It all depends on the details here. But thankfully, he has a lot of people in the Senate, people like Tom Cotton, who are very much on top of this. I don't think they're going to allow, and I don't think that Trump would sign a deal that was fundamentally bad for the United States and bad for Israel.
And by the way, I don't think Iran would do something that's not going to be verified by the Senate. They saw what happened last time. They didn't like that deal. I'm not sure if they actually liked it or not, but it didn't get verified. And the new guy comes in and just rips it up. So they might be like, you know, I don't know how this democracy works, but unless it passes the Senate, why would I sign something that it's not? So that's why I think when a bunch of senators, 70 senators come out and 40 senators come out and said no nukes, period, dismantle it, it means a lot. Now, the other thing is Putin doesn't show up to a meeting that he called today in Turkey, but Zelensky does. Where do these negotiations, how do you see these going?
It's very interesting. I don't think anyone's shocked that he didn't show up. I don't think Trump is shocked that he didn't show up. I think he's sort of overplaying his hand right now. I don't think Trump is going to look kindly on that. He's given him a lot of leeway. He's given Putin a lot of reason to believe that Trump is going to be a fair arbiter here, whatever that means to Putin. And I think that this is kind of, he's coming to the end of the road of Trump's patience.
It is, but I don't want them to walk away. I just think it's in our interest to make sure that we back up our ally. Chuck, excuse me. Here's Trump kind of covering for Putin a little bit. Cut 32.
Nothing's going to happen until Putin and I get together. Okay. And obviously he wasn't going to go. He was going to go, but he thought I was going to go. He wasn't going if I wasn't there. And I don't believe anything's going to happen, whether you like it or not, until he and I get together. But we're going to have to get it solved because too many people are dying.
So he's trying to say, well, I didn't go. It's on me, because he does not want to. If he comes out and says, this guy blew it, I gave him every opportunity, he feels the negotiations are over. J.D. Vance wants to drop these negotiations now. Just give him the little sliver of hope. He'd love just to cut off Ukraine.
Yeah, I think from the president's point of view, he has always seen this as sort of a proxy war between the United States and Russia that he and the American people did not want to be in and got kind of dragged into because of Putin, obviously. But so from his point of view, the people with the cards, as he would say, are the U.S., without whom Ukraine cannot continue to fight, and Russia. So it makes sense that, you know, from his point of view, obviously Ukraine is a stakeholder, major stakeholder, half of it here. But he sees this as something that he can solve with Putin on behalf of Ukraine.
I hope so, because it's really coming down to it. Like the president said, I'm losing patience. I don't want to spend any more time on this. I just wonder what Putin's thinking, because the central bank could get sanctioned, could make things worse. Third-party sanctions, that would hit India and China, because we're hitting China anyway, I guess, in theory, because they're buying Iranian oil and they're getting cheap oil from Russia, and their economy's still tanking.
Right. I'm glad you brought up JD, by the way. I do think that there is more daylight between JD's foreign policy, domestic policy, and President Trump's, and, for example, Marco Rubio, who I think is much more aligned with the president's foreign policy. And I think this is going to keep being more and more interesting to watch as we get closer and closer to 2028.
And, you know, some have speculated that Noam, Trump's liking that there's a little bit of a debate mm-hmm. between his two higher-ups when it comes to foreign policy. He's actually using his vice president. His vice president's doing a ton.
Yeah.
Bhatia, you going to stick around?
Sure.
All right. A few more minutes with Bhatia Unger Sargon right after this when we come back on the Brian Kilmeade Show. It turns out that Joe Biden wasn't all there during his term. This really caught me by surprise. Give me a second to regroup.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
He is among the people that are responsible for this. The leaders of the Democratic Party, the staff of the White House. And I have to say, I find everybody now talking to these authors, get out of here. Go home. You're part of the problem. Now you tell us? So I find, you know, the reason why the Democratic Party has less credibility today, because of this distrust.
You go home. Chuck Todd, you were hosting Meet the Press during the entire time. Are you nuts? You want them to go home? You quit or you got fired. I'm not sure. But Bhatia, are you kidding? Bhatia Unger Sargon is here. You go home. It's Chuck. Are you kidding? He's as complicit as anybody.
This whole thing is so infuriating, because what they're effectively doing is to get themselves off the hook. They are just basically humiliating Biden again, putting it all on him when they were the enablers, they were the liars, they were the gaslighters. Like, it was Jill Biden's job to protect her husband's mm-hmm. dignity. She's not the villain here.
So, Bhatia, it's like this. Imagine Bob Woodward. I went up to Nixon. I said, did you have anything to do with Watergate? He said, no. So I said, oh, there, what do you want me to do? Okay. Yeah, you're right. I wouldn't do a follow-up question like, well, we got tapes. So everybody knows that Joe Biden's failing in front of the camera. He refuses to show up, can't run cabinet meetings. You see the note cards, the scripted questions that he's – all these things. They don't ask any questions, and now he's telling just Jake Tapper to get out of here? Meet the Press was willing to conclude that Donald Trump was complying, was working with Russia to overthrow our government, mm-hmm. right? Because we're putting two and two together. But they can't put together forensically Joe Biden's failures.
Everything about this stinks. The people who wrote it being the very people who covered for him, giving cover still today all of their sources, not naming a single one. And it's because all of the Democrats are on board with this. They want to put the whole burden on Biden and move on. But here's why I think Republicans should love this.
Just so for people to know that Bhatia is saying that the cabinet members are on the record, but just not their names.
Exactly.
So cabinet members making the statements, but don't put my name down. Cowards.
Exactly. People who will keep working in the Democratic Party and in Democratic Party politics. Here's why I think Republicans should love this, though, because this is not just a cover for the party. It's a cover for the fact that they have no agenda. They're acting like the fact that Biden was failing in terms of his, you know, mental acuity is the reason they lost, when the reason they lost is they have nothing to offer the American people. So let them do
too.
This.
I mean, that's a drill down. I mean, I know you can
let them have this. Let them have their moment.
But your thoughts, because you go on so many different shows, from Bill Maher to CNN. What are your thoughts about how they think Trump is doing compared to the way they were portraying him before? Do you think they know he's doing a pretty good job, or do you think they really think he's unhinged?
I think they know. I think they know. Yeah.
It's hard to say, is
it? I think they know. They know because the polling shows, you know, yeah, on the economy, people are worried right now, but on immigration, on leadership, and you know what? In 6 months, people are going to be thrilled.
Thanks so much, Bhatia.
Thanks, Brian. God bless you.
But this way, I always...
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's a historical visit in itself. It's the first American president coming for a state visit to Qatar in the history. So, of course, the relationship has been ongoing for decades now. And it's on multi-levels, whether it's on the security, defense, economy, investments, energy, and education, and many other areas.
That was Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al-Thani. He is a Qatari prime minister and sitting down with Brett last night talking about the controversy with their country. Yes, Hamas lives there. Yes, they have relations with Iran. Also, they have relations with Israel. They have a huge military base from America. People think they sponsor terror. They also say we could contribute heavily to the American college system. I mean, you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. They might be the number one contributor to our Ivy League schools. Brett Baer joins us now. He's out with the president, chief political anchor of Fox News. He's overseas on the final stop of this week-long first overseas trip. Brett, welcome back.
Hey, Brian. I'm in Abu Dhabi right now.
How do you feel? Are you tired?
Yeah, I'm pretty tired, actually. But, you know, we were on the go, and I just finished an interview with the Deputy Prime Minister, Foreign Minister, Sheikh Abdullah bin Zayed here, ABZ, as he's known. Really thoughtful about, you know, all things around the region, Iran, Gaza, relationship with the U.S. Obviously, the president's here and continuing what are really big financial deals with all of these countries. But talking about those big issues as well and how to get to a solution, Iran being probably the biggest.
Last night was, what do you think was most revealing about last night with the Qatari prime minister?
A couple of things. One is they think the reaction to the donation of the plane is overcooked, you know, in the U.S. They think the relationship enables them to have that gift if they want to give it to the United States government. And, you know, it's not a done deal yet, but it seems like it's heading that way. And, you know, they point to they put billions of dollars into Al Udeid Air Base to set the table for the U.S. military to take control and obviously put central command there. And nobody had a problem with any of that. So, you know, that's their look at it. I thought that was interesting. I also thought that, you know, the thought that Iran is going to come to the table with something substantial for dismantling its program and maybe some kind of civilian effort for civilian nuclear power that ties in with Saudi Arabia and UAE and Iran. And,
some type of consortium.
That plan is kind of floating out there.
I know. I guess the foreign minister was there before you guys got there with the president in Saudi Arabia to propose that. I mean, that you'd have to believe they really think they need a civilian nuclear program. I did not know they were that concerned about the environment or running out of oil. But the other thing would be there's the different component would be with this would be you need to stop financing Hezbollah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Houthi rebels, terror groups in the region. And you can't have ballistic missiles that obviously could long range missiles that could have could be nuclear tipped. Right.
Yeah, that would be a different side that definitely was not touched on in the Barack Obama, you know, JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal. And so that would all have to be a part of it. I think that the foreign minister and deputy prime minister I just talked to here in UAE said the same thing. You know, UAE signed on to what's called a 1-2-3 program that essentially with the U.S. enabled them to have civilian nuclear power. They have four reactors. They need the electricity. They need the power because they're trying to go super high tech and get all of this AI. And for that, all these countries are going to need a lot of electric generation.
So they will, and by the way, they are willing to have enriched uranium elsewhere and bring it in for their nuclear power. So, Brett, the perception that I'm seeing is really strong. It looks like Saudi Arabia just loved having this relationship with the president and our country. Qatar, I thought, was over the moon. They couldn't have been more. I thought accommodating to the president. He seems thrilled. What's your take?
Yeah, there is this mutual bond, and I think the fact that he came here first means a lot to them. It shows this relationship. He obviously, his first stop on the first Trump administration was Saudi Arabia. The relationship with MBS, the Crown Prince, could not be tighter. And each one of these stops suggests a long-time friendship with these individual leaders who happen to be very young. MBS is 39. The emir in Qatar is, I think, 47. The president is enjoying this moment. He thinks that he's doing a lot of big deals and getting a lot of investment, which he is, more than $3.5 trillion in the U.S., and I think more importantly, it's about reshifting the region. You remember the Obama administration focused a lot on Iran and thought that they were the center of the Middle East. I think the Gulf states are the center of the Trump foreign policy Middle East.
So what do you think? First off, the word goes out that Saudi Arabia, as well as Turkey, personally asked the president, their leaders, would you meet with the leader of Syria? And he says yes, at which time he agrees to drop sanctions, and he lists a punch list for him to go after it. Muaz Mustafa was with us yesterday, and he's with the Syrian Emergency Task Force, born in Syria, lives in the U.S., goes back and forth, and he thinks this is a just titanic move. Cut 13.
Incredibly significant, the decision and the meeting. The president of the United States in his first term and in this term was the only American president between three different administrations, Obama, Biden, and President Trump, that actually did anything to stop the chemical weapons attacks against the Syrian children, to pass legislation that's like the Caesar Act to hold these war criminals accountable and push back against Iran and Assad and Hezbollah and Russia. And today, what President Trump has done is now kept Syria away from China, Russia, Iran. It is now helping make sure Syria is an ally that will be an important and influential ally of the United States.
And the opportunity happens because Russia's distracted with Ukraine and Hezbollah gets knocked out by Israel after the October 7th attack. They finally had no choice but to go in and finish him off. Then those two opposing forces stop backing Assad. He gets overthrown, and now the president, Trump, says it's worth the risk. You have a great sense of the area, Brett. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, listen, I think just listening to leaders, right, MBS was really ecstatic that the president made this action about pulling the sanctions and giving Syria a chance. The emir in Qatar, the same way. You heard the prime minister say this gives them a lifeline to try to come back into the fold. It's interesting that the deputy prime minister and foreign minister here in UAE is a little bit more skeptical, I think. Trust but verify, kind of the Reagan word, is what he used about Syrian president al-Shara, who, you know, only a year ago was a member of al-Qaeda in Syria, the al-Nusra Front, trying to get those groups to tie in with ISIS. Has a very sordid history, but is now president of the country and wants a second chance and wants to lead his people to prosperity. So all of these countries have buy-in because they want to see Syria succeed. There's just a healthy dose of skepticism some places that they can hit the marks that President Trump wants.
I don't know if you have a sense. You know what we're networks doing. I don't know if you have a chance to talk to your colleagues on the plane, but they're just focusing on the plane, on should the Donald Trump be getting a $400 million plane that's going to go to the Defense Department back and forth. It's hard. I mean, there is some reports, and I want you to hear Kelly McEnany. I want you to hear what Kelly McEnany told us on Fox and Friends. The people are realizing this is a big deal. I mean, the new approach, the relationships, the money and investments and partnerships in this new AI age is significant. The other channels are choosing almost to not report it. But listen to what Kelly McEnany told us.
There's this piece written this morning about all of these Biden administration officials that are watching this with shock and awe. And they said, here's one quote, when his personal instincts, Trump's, coincide with national interests, it's pretty remarkable how quickly he can move. That is a Biden official watching this in awe.
So if you're really approaching this fairly, and you're, and like Dave Ignatius is another guy from The Washington Post who just knows this region, for been here for 40 years. He's saying, why not try this new approach? We're not judging you by how you're running your country. We're looking to do business deals with you.
I actually think, Brian, that speech, it was long, and but the crowd in Saudi Arabia really, really loved it. And it played so big in the region as far as like newspaper headlines and leading newscasts, that those paragraphs about, we are not telling you how to run your country or how to build it. We are not trying to get you to build it in our image. This is your country. We want to be your partner. We want to lift you up, and we want to do business with you. That message, and saying, you know, it's not neocons, it's not us trying to take over, it's not us dictating what you should do, was really, really powerful, and a foreign policy kind of mantra for Trump Foreign Policy Part 2. We did a lot on it on Special Report. Brit Hume talked about it. We did it on the panel. It didn't get a lot of pickup in the U.S., and it's a shame. I think over time, people are going to look back at this trip and specifically that speech and say it was really, really significant.
Look, they're going to focus on the plane, and that'll be the Sunday shows. But they've become as insignificant these days outside Shannon Bream as the late-night shows. They used to kind of set the tone, and it's just not happening now. People are making their own decisions, and I think we're seeing that. And the last straw, if it wasn't the Russia investigation and the phony cases against Trump, it's now the Joe Biden cover-up. People are just being so disenchanted by what they're when they're being told things that they know are not true. You can't keep doing
I think they're missing the forest through the trees. I think that what we're talking about here is far more important, big picture, 30,000 feet. I think that the plane is, you know, a moment and a story. It's interesting. There are two sides, whether it's legal or not, I think is going to be tested. Whether it's seemly or unseemly, I think is, you know, you got a lot of people weighing in. And I think there are questions about the Trump organization doing big deals in all of these countries, you know, on the same time. You've got to cover it all. You have to. And I ask questions to all these leaders about it. But does it overtake the geopolitical paradigm shift that is happening? I don't think so.
Do you have the Axios story that said that Steve Witkoff handed an offer to Iran and they were taken under consideration? The White House has pushed back on that. But what about the Iranian deal? What are you hearing?
Yeah, I've had a lot of talks about this. There is specific and detailed stuff that's happening, you know, back and forth. And there is hope that the Iranians may go to something that can convince people, including inspectors, that they will dismantle in the effort to get a civilian program. Now, they've said that before, but with other members of the region like Saudi Arabia and UAE being a part of it, I think there's a possibility that there's something regional when it comes to civilian nuclear power.
Wow, it's going to be a lot going on. And also, have you been able to track it all? The Jake Tapper book, Alex Thompson book out that talks about how he would forget the cabinet members are now staying anonymous, but reporting that he was totally detached in meetings, mouth agape, looking totally out of it. You hearing these stories? Is that playing overseas?
It's not really playing overseas, but I've seen the clips and I've seen some of the excerpts, and I've also seen the criticism about, you know, how it was covered back then and how, you know, a number of the members of the media are trying to rephrase it now like they covered it one way back then. So I think it's a little frustrating, and there is definitely a sense in Democratic circles that that it's exasperating.
But they can't just keep saying we're going to move past it, because until you own up to it, why should we believe? If we didn't believe you then, why should we believe you now? Here's Jake Tapper, Cut 24.
I think some of the criticism is fair. to be honest, of me. Certainly, I'm not going to speak for anybody else. But knowing then what I know now, I look back at my coverage during the Biden years, and I did cover some of these issues, but not enough. I look back on it with humility.
Yeah, but I think, you know, that's like as the analogy I used last half hour. It's like, imagine if Bob Woodward said, Mr. President, President Nixon, had anything to do with Watergate? No, I didn't. Okay, fine. I covered it. I mean, you got to be kidding me. He wasn't curious about what was actually happening with no cabinet meetings, no press conferences, all these decisions. You never saw the guy?
Yeah. I appreciate the soundbite you ran, and I appreciate the sentiment. I don't know. It's looking back at that time, I remember what we were doing and getting
yes.
a lot of criticism for
yes.
it. And there weren't a lot of people standing up for us.
Absolutely. Brett, doing a great job. I mean, I love the walk and talk, showing me the city. So keep that up. I love it.
All right. I'll do it for you.
If you don't mind. As Brian Kilmeade said, if you could just, and I'll watch Special Report tonight.
I'll add that.
I hope they don't edit okay. that out, because a lot of times you'll put it in, but people edit it out, you tell me, right? yeah. Brett Baer, thanks
All
so
right.
much. See you in Special Report tonight.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Why should voters trust Democrats when it's clear so many in your party went to great lengths to keep Biden's condition hidden from the public?
What I can say is that we're not looking back. We're going to continue to look forward.
You interacted with President Biden during those days, those final days he was president of the United States. Did you sense there was a major deterioration?
Well, in the conversations that I was able to have on behalf of the House Democratic Caucus in those final days, we simply expressed our perspective as to what would be best for the party at that given moment in time.
As you look back, you were in a leadership position when President Biden decided to run again. Should you have done more at that point to intervene?
It's a great question in terms of whether voters can trust Democrats or not.
You can't get past it. They have their one talking point, but no one's going to buy it. And part of the reason is I didn't write the book. Brett Baer didn't write the book. Jesse Waters didn't write the book. You could say, you know, Victor Davis Hanson didn't write the book. You know, conservative people know him more for the conservative points of view. This is an outsider who used sources, and they would doubt that I had good sources. You're telling people on the left writing these books about a left wing presidency, a so-called moderate president who wasn't there. And I'm just thinking back, how many people called for the 25th Amendment and said Donald Trump was unhinged during his term? And how many generals like General Milley and General Kelly, who I like, I don't really know General Milley, who just despised Trump and were looking for any way to come up with a way, General Mattis too, to get him out of there. He wasn't worthy of the office. He was unhinged. He was crazy. He lost his mind. He's too old. At the same time, you put a guy in office that won in the basement, and when he got the job, he couldn't do the job, and they hid it. And now we find out with multiple sources, 200 sources, all anonymous, talking about horrible anecdotal stories about how inept he was in office and how we were really being run by a tight circle. I think Jill Biden and Hunter Biden most likely made more decisions than Joe Biden. That's going to be the story. Hey, go to BrianKilmeade.com. I'll talk about it on the stage in Dayton, Ohio, in June. In July, I'll be in Dallas. And in September, Richmond.
Well, I'll leave.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.